The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Be hanging out with me. I'm Jason Fitz, hanging out, sitting in the big seat, trying to fill the enormous shoes of one Paul Feinbaum, hanging out with you guys. 855-242-7285. You know how to get in on the conversation. 855-242-7285. We're going to have a little bit of fun over the course of the next 4 hours. Not a music question today. Yesterday we did that. Today we're mixing it up in honor of the Vanderbilt Whistler. Every time somebody calls, I'm going to ask you what your least favorite SEC tradition is. Just give me whatever, like something somebody else does that you hate. This is your chance to get it off your chest. And conversely, your chance to defend it after everybody gets riled up about it. 855-242-7285. We'll let you guys get in on the fun. But I think I've lost my mind. Y'all, I'm Jason Fitz, sitting in for Paul. And I got to be honest. I think maybe I've lost my mind. Because suddenly, I'm looking around at the SEC. I'm looking around at college football. And I'm asking myself, has Lane Kiffin become the voice of reason? Like the same Lane Kiffin that we're talking about now seems to be the one that has it all figured out. I can't believe I'm saying it. And you're rolling your eyes at it, right? Unless you're one of the few Lane Kiffin diehards, you're rolling your eyes. But hear me out. I'm starting to think that Lane Kiffin might be the one person looking at every NIL angle through an honest lens. He sat down with Sports Illustrated, Ross Dellinger, friend of the show. We've talked to Ross many times on this show. Sat down and had what they called a candid conversation. But what blew me away about it was that it was candid and real and honest and well thought out. Lane has figured out that, hey, guess what? Balance is all over the place, and maybe it doesn't really exist anyway. But now, in a name, image, likeness era, things have changed. And he's even open about what that change means. I said yesterday, I've talked to former players, and they all say, well, you still want to get in the league. Lane disagrees with that. Said that every single kid is going to go wherever there is the most money. And he made a really convincing point when talking about it. Even mentioned, hey, look at professional athletes. How often do they go to wherever they're going just because it pays the most cash? I'm a big NFL fan. You guys know that, right? And one thing every year that comes up during free agency that is interesting is why do certain players pick certain teams? And I remember interviewing Calais Campbell right after he had taken a massive job with the Jags. And I was asking him why he picked that grouping and did he talk to the coaches? And he's like, nah, it had nothing to do with that. He said, they offered me a ton of money. I know the offensive line there. I knew I could have success. That was it. That's how he made his career decision. And one thing Lane Kiffin points out is he's talking to kids all of the time that are picking schools based not on anything with the coach, but based solely on what name, image, likeness presents. Now, if that's the case and everybody wants to get puckered up about it and everybody wants to get scared, the question is, what's it mean? Well, Lane may actually have proposed a solution. If we're going to go all in and we're going to believe that schools are just going to pay whoever they want to come to their school, and Lane makes compelling points for why he thinks it is sustainable. I may not agree with that, but he thinks it is sustainable. He also makes a compelling point that maybe the answer is a salary cap. And we're not talking about a salary cap on the kids. No, he's talking about a salary cap on all the schools that limits what they're capable of spending. If you're going to act like a pro league, you basically become a pro league. And as much as that sort of makes some people skin crawl that love college sports, myself included, the question is why? Why not? I mean, if we're looking around the landscape of college athletics and we're saying, okay, guess what? All over the place, there are players that are starting to get paid. And it's become, as I've said so often the last couple of days, the wild, wild west. Like, if that's what we believe, right? Well, then at some point, you got to start to police it. But you can't necessarily police it from the kids' side. That ruins their ability at fair market. If the schools really want to stop things, the answer isn't to police the players. It's to police each other. Now, will the SEC and the Pac-12 and the Big 12 and the Big 10, will they all decide they want to play nicely enough together to have one salary cap across all of college football? I don't think so. But that also makes me wonder, like, why am I relying on stifling children because I can't control adults. Think about that. Why am I going to limit the earning potential of a bunch of kids because the adults in the room can't control themselves to come to some sort of an agreement on what they're willing to spend? I'm not going to do that. We said it all day yesterday. Adults should be adults. Let Jimbo step up and act like an adult. Let Saban step up and act like an adult. But surprisingly to me, the most adult coach in all the SEC right now might be Lane Kiffin, because he's not talking to you emotionally. He's talking to you realistically. He's talking about how if he's looking for a job, his first question is not facilities, it's collectives. What's your collective look like? What's their power of spending? Man, that's real. That's real. And if that's where we're going, suddenly coaches now are going to have to figure out how they want their money. You know, we talk about money a lot when it comes to kids. But we don't often talk about money when it comes to coaches. We don't often sit down and say, man, $10 million a year, some more, $12, $14 million a year to get out there and coach. Not sustainable. Yeah, it is. It's become sustainable. Not only is it sustainable, but coaches can get bought out at the blink of an eye for tons of money, and boosters turn around, they're like, yep, we'll just pay the next guy. Man, if that level of cash is sustainable across the board for everybody involving coaches, and it becomes sustainable across the board for everybody involving kids, then you got to ask yourself what the real want for competitiveness is about. If we want everybody to be playing from an equal playing field, we want everybody in college football to have the same opportunities, right? If that's what we really want, then what we need are for all the schools to come together and figure out how they are going to work on the same plane. The problem is they won't do that. We saw that. I said it yesterday. I'll say it again. Like, COVID was an opportunity for colleges to work together. They didn't do it, right? Scheduling has always been an opportunity for colleges to work together. They don't do it. Everybody's really just looking out for themselves. But Lane is looking around the landscape and saying, hey, at some point, we got to accept what the new normal is. The new normal is that these collectives are essentially becoming team owners. And they're going to start to insist certain guys get paid, and then get to play. And as a result of all of that, suddenly what you're going to end up with are teams that are built based on the budgets of the donors. And if that's the new reality for coaches, and everything's going to be crazy and chaotic, then wouldn't a salary cap at least put some sort of a system in place? But it'll never happen. It's the most reasonable, viable solution is a salary cap. And it won't happen. Because at the end of the day, the only way a salary cap happens is if Alabama is genuinely worried about whether or not Auburn can be competitive. That's not real. If Tennessee is worried about whether or not Vandy is competitive, that's not real. Across the board, schools are only looking out for themselves. But I'm looking squarely at Lane Kiffin, a coach I got no love lost for from his time with my beloved Raiders, and a coach that I'm looking at now saying, man, for all of the jokes and all the comments and all the memes and all the social media and the running up and down the sideline and the throwing the clipboard in the air and all of the conversation around Lane Kiffin, if you take all the noise away and you just read his most recent interview about the state of college football, you find out that behind all of the clown makeup is somebody that may have figured it all out. Suddenly, the voice of the new normal in college football is Lane Kiffin. All right, what do you think of Lane's idea? What do you think of the possibility of salary caps? As always, we're breaking it all down. Plus, I want to know your least favorite SEC tradition. Vandy Whistler, look, I lived in Nashville for so many years. I just, you know, I shrug a shoulder at it, but I think I have a solution, and maybe somebody's tried it. So I'll give you my solution, my thought on the Vandy Whistler, but we're going to get you guys involved right away. 855-242-7285, 855-242-7285. We'll take your calls on the traditions, on all things NIL, and we'll keep it going next on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I'm sitting there scrolling the World Wide Web. I see a video of the Vandy Whistler, and it occurs to me there's a real solution to it. Maybe somebody's tried it, but at least I'm going to throw it out there, and you can let me know. Maybe I've missed this attempt at the solution. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz in for Paul, 855-242-7285. I'm asking you guys your least favorite SEC tradition. I think this stuff is hysterical because we all have that one that gets under our nerves, right? Like, you either love or hate Rocky Top. There's no in between. And especially when the Vols were great, listening to Rocky Top that many times in a game, it was either going to be your favorite thing or your least favorite thing. So I want to hear from you guys. Take your calls in a second. I keep thinking about the Vandy Whistler, and there's a video out there of somebody in the stands going up to him and, you know, reminding him that that they are ruining the experience for everybody else in the stadium. And I don't think they're 100% wrong. I fall on both sides of this. You know, I mean, there's a part of me that says I love the passionate fandom to the point that you're going to come in and do your thing exactly the way you want to do it. That's fine. But I also look at it and say, yeah, everybody else is in that stadium or arena, depending on the event, too. So there's the fine line. I just wonder why somebody hasn't just sat behind him with an air horn. So, like, every time he starts to whistle, just blow an air horn at his head. Like, at some point, would that not stop? If I realized that every time I whistled and it annoyed the whole crowd, that I was going to get air horned, like, especially if a bunch of people bring him in, like, if you know the Vandy Whistler is going to be there, just air horn him every time he whistles until it hurts his ears and if he doesn't want to do it anymore. That seems like a solution. I can't stop the whole marching band from playing Rocky Top, but I got to believe that a few fans in a baseball stadium can stop the Whistler. Maybe I'm off. You guys tell me, 855-242-7285. We'll get back to some of this NIL stuff and what it means for the SEC. But first, I'm going to get Christopher from Alabaster in. Christopher, thank you for calling the show, my friend. What you got? What's on your mind?
Definitely the worst tradition in SEC sports is Woo Pig Suey by the Arkansas fans.
You're out on Woo Pig Suey?
Why does it take six times for them to say it once? What's going on there?
All right, what's the other side of it?
They do all the hand motion and all that. Like, what's that about? Like, what? And then, yeah, that's it right there.
What's the other side of it then? What's your favorite tradition, Christopher? What
would get you going? Easily Dixieland Delight on a Saturday night in Bryant-Denny Stadium. The best in sports, period.
Okay. You know what? That is pretty. And thanks for the call, Christopher. I can't 100% disagree with you on the greatness of that particular, because that is pretty amazing. I think, you know, for me, I traveled with College Game Day a couple of years ago and went to a lot of stadiums, and I think seeing some of these traditions in the stadium, especially when you don't have a vested interest one way or the other in who's winning the game, it's amazing how many cool traditions there are that really get everybody to just stop and be a part of it. We'll let that be a part of this too. 855-242-7285. Let's make it positive and negative. How's that? We'll make it. Give me your favorite and your least favorite. Give me a bit of both of them as the process goes along. And the other part of this conversation that I think is important right now throughout the SEC, 855-242-7285, by the way. The other part of this conversation that I think is wild to me is the one about scheduling. And realistically, when you start talking about the schedule, there's a great debate. Do you play 8 conference games? Do you play 9 conference games? As many of you have seen in the articles that have been written about it, do you play 8 conference games or 9 conference games with one that's a constant and everything else is rotating, or 3 that's a constant and everything else is rotating? My question is, why do you need a standard system all the way across the board? Like, we live in a college football playoff committee world now, right? So it's not just winning games. It's going to be judged. Everything that you do is going to be judged. So strength of schedule and strength of resume are huge factors. I work on one of our shows on ESPN that reacts to the college football rankings every week, and we talk every single time about strength of schedule, strength of record, you know, game control, all of these metrics they have that the committee sits down and studies to try and figure out what's the best formula to getting the four best teams in the college football playoff. And when I think about that and I take it forward and I make it suddenly about scheduling also, I'm just left to wonder why everybody has to have the same system. If you're Vandy, you may not have, I keep using Vandy, y'all, because 20 years in Nashville, I have to, right? But if you're Vandy, you may not have three cooked-in rivals that you really care about, making sure you get on the schedule every single year. And certainly, whatever teams are playing you are getting to chuckle a little bit because they know they're playing Vandy, right? But you flip the other side of that around. If you're Alabama, man, there's a ton of rivalries you care about. If you're Auburn, there's a ton of rivalries. If you're LSU, if you're Florida, we can go up and down the list. If I ask you to say, okay, pick the three games you absolutely have to keep on your schedule, how many of you guys have three games off the top of your head you know you want? But why does that have to be the rule for everybody? Let schools take their own chance. See, I love the way that they want us to think that scheduling is this impossibly difficult task when we just watch schools schedule off the cuff. We just saw it in a COVID-19 year where it was like, hey, we're going to blow this whole thing up and we're going to create an all new schedule this year because we can't do what we thought we were going to do. Now, if you've shown me you can do that once in a moment of absolute chaos surrounding college football, then what you've really told me is you can do this all the time. So you've told me you don't actually have to schedule these games out 5, 6, 7, 8 years, which would be an advantage to everybody trying to capitalize on who's good in the moment to make sure they get the best schedule possible. Like, if you're sitting there and you're a Bama fan, frankly, why do you care what schedule Florida's playing? Ultimately, you know, if you're an Alabama fan, all you have to do is take care of your business. If you take care of your business in the SEC, if you take care of your business and the school has laid out your schedule appropriately, you're going to the college football playoff, right? I mean, do you really think there's a world where a team in the SEC goes off in the regular season, beats everybody else on their schedule, and the schedule has a good level of difficulty to it, and they don't make the college football playoff? Nah. So why does it matter? Especially if we end up in a world where suddenly the divisions eventually go away, which I think is part of the future for most of these conferences, and they're putting their two best teams, no matter what the division is, within the conference in a conference championship game. That makes scheduling even less important to some of this conversation. See, there's no advantage to Alabama to scheduling cupcakes the entire season. If they do that, the committee can penalize them. They take their own destiny out of their own hands. But if they keep the rivalries that matter, if they keep the games that are most important to them, well, then they have an opportunity to turn around and say, okay, we've put together a resume that will allow us to get into the college football playoff. If a school decides they want to schedule soft, that's their right. They'll pay the price for it. And we've seen that enough to know. You know, every year, Big Ten fans come in, Big 12 fans come in, and they yell about the SEC teams that play those cupcakes. We have to listen to it every year on every show I'm on. And that's part of the risk that everybody takes. You schedule some cupcakes because you want to pad some wins. I understand why everybody does it, right? But there's some mindset here that you got to understand what the final goal is. For all of the conference meeting agenda items that are going to be there for them, that they're going to have to figure out within the SEC, and they're going to talk about having their own playoff and what they could do to make the conference even more money. Understand, it's always about money, and it's always about making the college football playoff. So let every school individually look across the board and say, hey, here are the games that will make us the most money. Those are the games we want to play. That's all you need to know to figure out how you can move forward throughout the course of the SEC. I think standardizing everybody to force everybody to one schedule is, yet again, everybody worried about what your neighbor's doing. And in the SEC, if you just worry about your house, you're going to be just fine. 855-242-7285 is how you get in on the Paul Feinbaum Show. 855-242-7285. Speaking of Alabama, we'll talk to an Alabama expert next to figure out what to look for this season and what things look like in the recruiting world for Alabama. Plus, more of your calls coming up. Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
I'm Jason Fitz, sitting in for Paul. We're going to get you guys involved in the conversation, celebrating some of the best and worst. So what's the best and worst tradition in all of SEC sports? This is in honor, of course, of the Vandy Whistler. I think we can all agree that's got to be one of the worst, at least. 855-242-7285 is how you get in on the fun there. 855-242-7285. But again, let's do positive and negative. So we'll go best and worst. In the meantime, while we're getting set for all of that, I want to get a little bit of insight on what to expect. We were just talking about Alabama, and let's get an expert on all things Alabama. Alabama recruiting reporter for the USA Today Network, Jarrell Rushen, joining us. Jarrell, really appreciate your time, man. Thanks for hanging out with me today. And there's all this conversation we've been having all week on Feinbaum about name, image, likeness, and what it means for recruiting and navigating these waters. Well, we all know that Arch is going to be visiting and talking to Alabama. So how real is the courtship in your mind between the Tide and Manning?
Well, thanks for having me, Jason. I still think it's pretty real, even though there is a commitment. But we know not a lot of teams take two quarterbacks. Alabama's only done it a few times under Saban, and the most recent time was 2017. But Eli Hosting is a good quarterback if Alabama does not land Arch Manning like many people want them to do. But Hosting's a big guy. He's decisive with the ball. Bama's used to that with guys like Bryce Young. And he can run a little bit for a big guy too. So I think it's real. You have to wait and see how things play out. But it's rare for a school to take two quarterbacks, especially if that caliber. Both of these guys are top 75 guys in the nation. Arch is obviously number one at a lot of places.
Any surprise to you that Eli would come out and commit before the Arch visit?
It was possible because a program wants to have that quarterback as a cornerstone of their class. It's not always a good thing to be waiting for a quarterback late in the signing period, right around February when the signing day is going on. These quarterbacks can recruit for these coaches, recruit other kids on visits. People were recruiting for Alabama that committed in 2022 around the nation last year, during football season. So I think it's a good thing that Alabama has Eli Holstein in right now. And this probably affects Arch Manning's likeliness to go to Alabama. It definitely affects it, but I mean, hypothetically, Eli could decommit. Things change all the time. He was committed to Texas A&M last year and ended up decommitting earlier this year. I think it's a situation where Bama's happy if they could get Eli or Arch.
So, Jarrell, a lot was made last week, obviously, of Saban and Jimbo yelling at each other about the processes for each of them. As somebody that works and covers recruiting so much, Have you seen a difference or a change in recruiting NIL that you think is tangible to these programs?
I think so. I think it really matters to some kids. Every kid wants a little bit of change in their pockets, but I'm not sure it affects the top guys as much as it may affect some of the lower tier guys. I still think your top guys are going to go to programs where they believe they can develop at. And Texas A&M has always put a lot of people in the NFL, as Alabama, obviously. I don't think it's a big deal for sure, but recruiting is still going to be about going where you can get developed at, in my opinion. It may affect what schools you go to at that top level for these five-star guys, these four-star guys. But as with everything, it seems like the big guys in college football are going to benefit more from it. You may not have that four-star that goes to a low-level Power 5 school versus a team that has potential with the marketability, the size of the program, that would attract more people that can offer these kids NIL deals.
We're talking to Jarrell Russian. You can check him out at Jarrell Russian _ on Twitter, Alabama recruiting reporter for USA Today Network on the Paul Feinbaum Show. Jason Fitz filling in. And Jarrell, I guess follow me here, because I keep thinking about guys that I know at ESPN that played college football. And so many of them will tell you that it was the position coach or the recruiting coordinator that always seemed to matter to them. That's who they had the closest relationship with in their time, not the head coach. But Alabama has constant turnover all over the place on their coaching roster, and it never really seems to impact their ability to recruit. Is it just Saban and everybody else is just in the mixing bowl as the side ingredient?
What Alabama wants to do, like you said, is turnover every year. It's pretty ridiculous the run they're on, despite all the turnover. But I think what helps them is that they get multiple guys to build relationships on the staff with these recruits, just in case a staffer leaves for another college, leaves for an NFL job, as we've seen in the past. And that really helps, because these guys are getting recruited by all these programs across the country. Bama doesn't just take kids in Alabama, so they're competing against schools in Florida. And Ohio State, for example, is a school that recruits Florida a lot. You have to make sure that you have a lot of guys have relationships with these players these days, just because of how national recruiting is. When Nick Saban got to Alabama, national recruiting wasn't at the level that it is now, and staffs weren't as big as they are now. So you're able to pull that weight in those areas without just and not be limited to losing a guy just because one coach decides at the end of the season that he wants to do something else with his career.
It's funny when you say that, because it just makes me think about, you know, I'll date myself here, but like the NCAA college football game that so many people my age played, right? And when you used to build the program, you had to make a decision. If you were going to recruit somebody that was out of your area when you were doing that mode, it cost you all these points, because, man, recruiting on the other side of the country was difficult. Now it feels like every school can do that however they want, if they're willing to spend the money. So with your eye on recruiting, you know, knowing that we just watched a national championship game where Georgia beats Alabama and finally gets that sort of moment and that shine, if you looked at those two programs based on where they are in the recruiting that you know for the next 3 years, which team in your mind is, which program is better set to be at the top?
It's hard to say, but if my gut would tell me that Alabama is still better positioned for the future, solely because they've proven over time and time again that they can rebuild, and rebuild isn't the right word. Reload is the right word. And this is Georgia's first time reaching the mountaintop, and Georgia is well equipped to continue to reach the mountaintop, but so is Alabama, and Alabama's has proven that they can do it despite losing coaches losing players. Like Georgia lost a ton of players this year. Alabama's done that a few times over the last 10 years. And Bama isn't going anywhere when it comes to recruiting. I mean, right now they have a five-star committed already, and we're not in the summer yet. A top 60 quarterback, top 60 player in Eli Holstein in the country, two other four-star recruits. Georgia has a heck of a class already as well, but I think the national championship helps Georgia a lot when it comes to recruiting guys in Alabama that tend to go to Alabama more times than not, in Auburn more times than not, in other places. So I think Georgia had definitely gained points around the country with recruits with the national championship, and it'll be tight between those two programs.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at Jarrell Russian _. Check him out on the USA Today Network, doing Alabama recruiting reporting there. It takes a special skill set to be able to cover the recruiting, dude, and you do it really well. I appreciate you hanging out with me. Thank you so much for the hang.
Appreciate it so much.
That's Jarrell Russian hanging out with us. And, you know, it's funny because I don't know what the sales pitch really is. Like, realistically, you walk in the room, you look at Saban, and he says, yep, you either know you want to come here or you don't. You know, if you're Alabama, you can look at it and say, look at the number of wide receivers we get drafted. I joked last year during college football season that they're becoming wide receiver U, right? Like, you can look at the explosiveness of the offense. You know that you're going to get every opportunity to win a national championship, and you know that the cupboard's never bare, and you know that you got Nick Saban as your head coach. So you're always going to be in the thick of the conversation. It's such an easy moment. I respect Arch for going out and checking out every free steak he can get. He should get along the way, within all the rules, of course. But along that way, I just wonder what the sales pitch would be. I want you guys to continue to get in on the conversation. 855-242-7285. The question of the day, and this is a simple one: what's the best and worst tradition in all the SEC, in honor of the Vandy Whistler? The best and worst. We'll take more of your calls. I'll give you some of my thoughts on our next 855-242-7285. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz filling in.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz filling in. Harry, just give me – Harry's doing a great job behind the scenes. When you call in, you get to talk to Harry. Be nice to Harry. He's a great dude. Harry, why did we go with that? Why this song coming in? Was there any particular –
If you want my actual reasoning, it's simply because it's the first one that I saw and it's the first one I clicked.
Okay. That's you know what? I appreciate the honesty, Harry. Keep him coming. Harry's on the ones and twos, making sure that everybody's having a good time. I'm asking you guys about good and bad. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. You know the number. I'm asking you for the best and worst SEC tradition. This in honor of the Vandy Whistler, which I would put amongst the worst. You guys are fired up about it, as always. Jim from Alabama. Jim, thanks for calling the show. Thanks for hanging on. What you got? What's the SEC tradition that you love and hate?
Okay, thanks for taking my call, Jason. Disclaimer right off, I'm an Oregon Duck fan. I've been calling Paul for about 11 years now since I first moved down here. So the one that I hate them all, but the one that I hate the most and I would love to see happen is at Auburn, when they release the eagle, I would love to see that bird just fly away and keep on going and never come back. Just let the bird, either that or have the bird just go absolutely ballistic and go nuts and start going through the crowd so that they would have to get rid of it. But my favorite would be to just have the bird just keep flying right out of the stadium and never come back.
No, that's remarkable. Now, wait, so you're from Oregon, you're a Ducks fan. Does this mean now, I mean, Dan Lanning's your new coach, right? That got that Georgia tie. Does that give you some sort of SEC tie to all of this? Like, you feel like you're going to have SEC people rooting for you?
I tell you what, I love Coach Lanning. He's once Cristobal bailed out on us, our class fell clear down to 32 when it was a top five, and Dan Lanning turned around and brought us all the way back up to number 13 for the 2022 class. Love having him here. He's going to be an outstanding young coach, young staff. And that kind of goes to my best, and I know no one really knows about it out here, but that would be out at Oregon in between the third and fourth quarters. Jump and Shout, where the entire stadium is dancing and singing a Jump and Shout, including all the players in the stands, on the field, coaches. Everybody's just going ballistic to that song and dance right there. But I tell you what, Jason, I've been over to Auburn. I've watched some games. I would just love to watch that bird just fly out of the stadium and just keep on flying.
Oh, Jim, thanks for the call, my friend. Two things on that. Number one, as long as the bird's safe, as long as the eagle's safe, it's hysterical. I just keep thinking about the eagle going out and being like, I'm finally out of here. And I think Lanning's going to turn out to be a hell of a hire. So congratulations in advance. I think Oregon got themselves a good coach. Let's go to Casey. Casey from Alabama. Casey, give me your best and worst from the SEC.
Man, that's funny that I just come behind him, because the best is the eagle at Auburn. And I'm an Alabama fan. I'm an Alabama fan, but that eagle, it's beautiful. It's up there flying, and look. So, but the worst is the damn cowbells at Mississippi State. That's just, I mean, it's a headache.
It's a nuisance, right? Like, it just gets under your skin after a while. You just want a little break, a little silence from it. I appreciate that.
You're tailgating, having a good time. You ate, your belly's full, you're watching, maybe consumed a few adult beverages and all that. And it's a headache. But, you know, I like Mississippi State too. But, and again, Alabama fan, Dixieland a lot. That's awesome. That's probably the best, but Auburn, the eagle flying and all that, that's the best.
Well, I appreciate the call, Casey. And look, I think there's some truth to all of that. Like, it can be beautiful because it is majestic. Anytime, you know, you see the eagle fly, like, it's just majestic. But there's just the concept of the eagle flying away that's also a little bit funny. It's a combo platter of a bit of both. Larry and Shelby. Larry, thanks for calling the show. I know you call all the time. Larry, what you got? Thanks for calling.
Oh, man, I'm with the eagle flying off, but if he had our man on his claws flying with him, and just fly our man ass right on out of here, you know. That would be a 2+ bonus. Hoorah, I would just jump up and down and drink a 24 beer celebrating. And the other thing would be the Georgia Bulldog, that ugly-looking mutt. If he had just hiked his leg on Kirby Smart's leg and pissed all over him, that'd be good. How about that?
Oh, Larry, that's a delight. That's good. That's good stuff. Look, Uga is beautiful. He's beautiful, beautiful little guy. But, you know, anytime a dog just decides to relieve themselves on the sideline, I'm not going to say no to it. We're taking your calls on it, 855-242-7285. What else you got, Larry?
I got Texas A&M crying. Look on that helmet. It says ATM. I mean, come on, man. They got all this bread. And Jimbo Fisher just went too far. That was hateful, man. He had hate in his heart. When he was doing that stuff, I was sitting there going, that man's got a problem, man. He needs to be laying down on a couch somewhere talking to a psycho guy, you know, telling him what's wrong with him. You kidding me? The way he's so hateful, man. Damn. And he proved out to be a liar. Steve Spurrier stuck up for Saban. And when Steve Spurrier stuck up for Saban, I noticed it's the truth. Well, ain't gonna lie, is it?
Look, Larry, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. I would say this about any of that. Like, there's no doubt these guys are fired up. I mean, watch them on Saturdays on the sideline, and you see exactly how fired up they are and why they are so good at what they do. Like, coaches coach with emotion, and both of those coaches, Saban and Jimbo got too emotional and in some ways got too personal. And as I said yesterday, didn't give any real information in their accusations. I have a real problem with that. I'm on both sides of it. They got to come out and give me some sort of proof. But I don't blame them for being upset with each other either, because a lot was thrown out from both sides about each other in that process. 855-242-7285. Give me your best and worst SEC tradition. What do you love? What do you hate? It just makes me feel like I want fall here right now. I just love every ounce of what we're talking about and what it brings. We'll get more of your calls, plus more thoughts on scheduling in the SEC coming up. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, sitting in for the big guy.